is Vicky Lovchik, and she's going to be talking about e-conservation and management in urban landscape.
So good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to give a talk to you today about managing bees in urban ecosystems. And this is also moving the symposium into more the very local scale of looking at things. So the outline of my presentation will be to go over an importance of bees and a little bit about urban ecology, because this has been an issue that has come up very recently, so that the study of urban ecosystems has really gotten into the public eye. And I'll talk a bit about the urban habitat as it refers to my bees, and then I'll share with you some of the research questions that I'm going over. The work I'm presenting to you today is in part my dissertation work and in part the collective work that the Franke Lab has developed in regards to bees in urban areas and the conservation of bees. So the global diversity of bees is pretty amazing, as you may have gotten the idea from this morning when Dr. Daly spoke. We're looking at numbers somewhere between 20 to 40,000 species across the globe. When you move into North America, 3,500, I've heard also 4,000. A little bit of debate there. California has about 1,600 species of bees. These are distributed across all of the different ecological regions in California. And in Berkeley and Albany, we've found 84 species of bees just in the urban Berkeley-Albany area. At the Oxford Tract, where I do some of my research, it's a managed garden that we developed for the purpose of bee conservation, we've managed to see 37 species of bees in that small plot. And here's just some highlights here of some of the species we're looking at. These are all actually local species from the Berkeley-Albany area down here. So there's a lot of diversity in morphology and behavior. It's a great group to work with. The importance of bees in terms of ecosystems is there's the agricultural and economical pollination aspect, which is pretty obvious to people. You know, one third of everything that you put in your mouth is directly a result of pollination, but indirectly, I'd be able to argue probably that almost everything that you eat somehow has an effect through pollination. If you visualize your hamburger at McDonald's, hopefully you're not eating there, but we can talk about the Big Mac. It's a great outreach tool because a lot of people do eat your Big Mac. You know, you've got your tomato, which, yeah, you can see how that happens. The onion, that makes sense. But when you start getting into that meat patty and that cheese slice, you have to realize that indirectly, you're talking about the cow that eats the alfalfa, which is a huge forage crop, which is pollinated by specifically very well alfalfa leafcutter bees, native bees that rely on conservation of habitat resources and everything. So the whole Big Mac is somehow related to bees. Bees are actually, you know, really important too in other ecosystem services like soil aeration, because a lot of them are ground nesters. So they're more of like a native earthworm. They will tunnel into the soil and everything. So that helps a lot with keeping soil quality up. They're food for other organisms. Birds like to eat them. There's a lot of scansorial things that like to eat them. And in addition to that, I've actually heard the argument that bees are important supporters of tourism industries that revolve around bird watching, because a lot of birds eat bees. So there's this whole recreational, economical link there. And there's a cultural and spiritual link that people have to a lot of animals. But bees, actually, you know, they go back biblically. They're mentioned in all different religions. So there's this huge connection that people have to this one organism. Lots of reasons why we should be interested and concerned. Now, when it comes to urban ecology, when I started my graduate career 3 years ago, so we're talking now pre-2004, when I was looking for an institution or a program that studied urban ecology, I was having a lot of trouble because I kept coming across the sociological definition that you're looking at demography and human population distributions within an urban area. A lot of studies of race and gender distributions, income stuff, nothing really to do with ecology as I understood it. And it wasn't until I started, maybe I learned how to search better on Google, who knows, but post-2004, I really started to see a lot more information out there where if you say urban ecology, someone's like, yes, you mean the ecosystems in the urban area. So that was really great. And, you know, back when I was doing my undergrad, I actually was told by many professors that there is no such thing as urban ecology. They are concrete wastelands. So I don't know, there's a bit of a bias there. I guess maybe it's who you talk to, but I'm quite happy that also that this is the direction that my study is going. So the research questions that we've been working on, the ones that are in blue are ones that I actually have answers to. The ones in green will make up the rest of my dissertation. So there's some work to be done. We wanted to look at what kind of floral resources are out there for bees. What kind of bees are then using these resources? If you can manage these, can you take this information and actually be a manager of this ecosystem service via this organism? And more so, if you start looking at the very local level, the urban environment itself, are there characteristics within the urban matrix that actually affect how that bee experiences the environment, places where it's preferential to concentrate your efforts if you're trying to conserve bees? So in the study of the resources available in the Berkeley-Albany area, this is a 1995 piece that got published in 05 by the Frankie Lab, most of the plants in urban areas turned out to be exotic. This is a real artifact also of North American and Western urban areas, because people have taken what they've seen all over the world and planted it back home, and everything grows well in California, so, you know. And only about 50 of the 900 species turned out to be California natives. When you looked at what the bees thought, they were looking at only about 9% of the exotics they were interested in, but 52% of these natives they were interested in. So there's already one interesting dynamic where you have the vast majority of non-native plantings, but the few natives are the ones that are getting all the attention from the bees. We're carrying out the same study across California. We've got some cities highlighted. All the way from Ukiah down to Santa Barbara. I haven't made it to San Diego yet because it's hard to get there, you know, by car, and we need to take all of our equipment. And the same trends are starting to come up, where you have all these resources, most of which are actually non-native, and the native ones are really pulling in the bees. Here's a look at kind of what a bee would experience in an urban area. So there's a lot of bizarre stuff going on here, because from the perspective of a wildlife biologist, you probably consider that this is pretty poor quality habitat, because it's certainly surrounded in a matrix that's good for nothing when it comes to an animal. But if you think about the foraging behavior and ecology of a bee, they're used to existing in this habitat where they have resource and non-resource matrix, and they can fly from one to the other. So this is one of the reasons why urban areas tend to be pretty good places for birds and things that fly, because a large mammal can't really navigate the street system, but my bee can fly over top of something and go and visit this flower and be pretty content. And how do these urban bees compare to the natural settings? This is a question that everyone asks, you know, so you found some bees in the urban area. Are there more or less than in the wildland? And this is compiled data, not all collected with the same method, because in a lot of areas there hasn't been the same sampling effort dedicated to bees, but it does look like, family-wise and general-wise, we've got a similar distribution of the number of bee species that we, family in general, and species-wise, we're even doing better than some areas like Kissimmee's, although I wonder if that's because it's hard to actually get up there and sample the sites where you need. And another interesting factor is that the bees that are coming into these urban areas, some of them are actually really agriculturally important. So we have species, and these are all from Berkeley, that are significant pollinators. So tomatoes, huge cash crop there. And the best one here is the blue orchid bee, Osmia lignaria. Almonds, peaches, cherries, all of these crops that are really important for California's economy have a pollinator living right in the city. So the things that actually influence the bee community are the type of the resource, the quality of the resource, those obvious things. But in the urban area, it comes down to some things like social and cultural factors and disturbance levels, which we're going to start looking at. And here's one of the questions we look at is, can you construct a resource for bees? Well, yeah. Zero bees in an empty field after 2 years of development, 37 species of bees. So that works really well. And I added another slide to here. Mobile unit sampling, instant bees. So in some of the research that we've done, we have a mobile unit that we sample with. We've taken it out into the field, we've put it down, and a bee has shown up immediately. This doesn't mean that all species of bees show up immediately, but it basically does mean that you have a really high detectability when you use these methods. So you can not only build habitats for these organisms, but you can, if they're there, you will find them if you put the right resource out. And this is just a quick slide that I'll brush over because I'm running short on time. On how to construct a bee garden, I was just mentioned that some people might be interested. Get a lot of diversity of good bee plants in there. have some bare dirt remaining, and you should have bees. And actually, you can speak to me later about the webpage if you want more information on this. See, so these are just some summaries of our findings today, and I'll skip over those. My research right now is going to focus on looking at how bees can be incorporated into urban dwellings and urban lifestyles. So I believe, after experiencing some of this stuff, that the aesthetic gardening, agricultural gardening, cultural gardening, municipal beautification, all are potentials for bee conservation. And one of the quirky parts about urban areas is that there's a lot of private land, a lot of different stakeholders at play, so that's difficult to balance when you're doing bee conservation. What's the best target? We don't know yet. This is an area that we're starting to look into. And what characteristics are actually influencing how the bee is seeing the resource in the urban area? This is also a point that we're starting to look into, which will be part of my dissertation topic. Because the idea here is that for all these guys here, do they actually see a difference between these different habitats? Is one better than the other? Is one worse than the other? Perhaps. But no one's actually sat down and had a look to see if a bee is going to bother to go to this rosemary planted in this traffic cone, or if it's going to prefer this. There's some suggestions that say you'd probably prefer the more enclosed, less disturbed, but I've seen some bees in some strange places. So I even have an anecdotal comment of a colleague from New York that saw a bee visiting his friend's penthouse vegetable garden on the 36th floor. So that's still open to investigation, and this is what I'll be focusing the rest of my time at Berkeley here. So I'd like to end just by saying, you know, you got to think of the bee and think of the people that live in the urban area and see how those two can work together if bee conservation is going to be successful in urban areas specifically. And thanks to some of the funding, the Walker Fund, Slauson Fund, and two of our taxonomists, Terry Griswold and Robin Thorpe, for identifying some of these bees. Thank you very much. In the urban area, we've actually seen that they seem to forage on two different resources. So all of the research I showed you for bees preferring plants, those are native California bees, and they tend to actually use different plants than honeybees. When you give, like, if you have a very diverse field, and there's some plants that we know are native bee plants, and then some general plants, the honeybees actually kind of go their way, and the native bees go their way. So we haven't really seen interference from native bees and honeybees. They don't.
Are honeybees the only bees?
There's one species of invasive bumblebee, and there's two that are locally not natives, but they're from the other side of the Sierras. But we haven't seen the kind of competition where it would be like aggressive resource use, and then the native bee that you care about comes, and there's nothing there. So, yeah.
Great job. I'm curious, bees are more scent-oriented or sight-oriented?
They actually don't see incredibly well, because the insect eye is a compound, well, bees have the compound eye, so they're really good at detecting movement, and if there is a certain color, but they can't resolve things. So when they're actually looking for a resource, they're smelling it and they're seeing the patches like of color that they like, but they don't have a fine detailed eye. So they use a combo of both. Yes.
Last question.
Okay. Has anyone actually looked at the difference in kind of urbanization between different cities? Because I'm thinking I live in San Francisco, and San Francisco compared to Berkeley is a garden for a bee compared to...
Yeah, so actually that's an interesting comment, and I didn't get around to this. No one's actually compared cities on that level, but one thing that we actually found, which is sort of answering your question in a roundabout way, is that there seems to be an economic correlator to bee diversity, but it's bimodal. So in areas where you have your average middle-class family that owns a home, has some free time, plants a garden, there's bees. In areas where there's incredibly wealthy people, for instance, Pacific Grove, where we looked for bees and found zero because they hire a gardener and the gardener's like, all right, well, I'm just going to do something easy, and they plant something green and waxy. Or in areas where you have people that don't have a lot of income and they actually don't have the free time to participate in gardening, you don't have the bees. This is anecdotal for me. I don't want to, you know, start pointing fingers and saying the rich and the poor don't have bees and the middle class do, right? But it's something that came up, and I think it's fascinating that it just worked out that way. Anyway, thank you very much.